Hey, friendly reminder, this podcast is not for kids or people who have a stick up their ass.
Friday, 5:58 p.m.
I'm sleeping with my best friend's husband.
I think my uncle killed someone in his suicide.
I am a sugar baby.
I'm a soccer mom addicted to Adderall.
I think my sister is actually my uncle's kid.
My husband bought his hooker a car whenever I was helping
him. I was living with my husband.
What's your secret? Welcome back to another week of Beyond the Secret. My name is Ace Fanning, and it has been a while since we last spoke. Connected? I'm not really sure what terminology to use for a podcast where I'm just talking at you. Either way, it's been a while since my last episode. And if you miss the show in its off weeks, you can always join Patreon, where you can listen to Beyond the Secret every single week for just $10 a month. There is a sign-up link in the show description if you're interested in hearing stories like the most recent Patreon episode and one of my new favorite episodes of all time, Me, My Wife, and Other Men, where a husband and wife invite us into their bedroom and give us a complete rundown on, well, the relationships that they share with other men. And also in that, I do my own personal deep dive into double penetration. And now I don't do it. And the mechanics behind how it all actually works. You know, it is quality stuff over there on Patreon. And before we get into this story, if you have a story you would like to share on the podcast, send me an email at beyondthesecretpodcast@gmail.com. Now, on to the story that you're about to hear. I love when I can line up episodes with a theme between here and Patreon. And tonight on Patreon, I'm premiering a two-part episode titled Mr. Red Flags, the Con Man of My Dreams. And tonight and next week, we're going to hear a lot about red flags. And while I don't believe you should judge a book by its cover, and while I also know that I am definitely someone who makes a terrible first impression, sometimes our gut is just right. More often than not, our gut is right, and we have to learn to trust ourselves. And I know for a lot of people that is easier said than done. And as cliche as this may sound, when someone shows you who they are, believe them. Okay, here we go. This week's secret, boyfriend turned stalker, part one. Tell me about yourself.
Well, you know, I'm just kind of, I would say like I'm an average person. I just kind of do my own thing. I go to work every day. I come home, spend time with my current boyfriend, my cat, and my friends. And I just kind of live a really low-key life right now. I don't know. This is kind of a hard question to answer. I mean, I'm pretty simple. I work hard and I come home and I relax and there's not a whole lot to me.
How old were you when you first met your ex-boyfriend?
I was 27 at that time.
How did the two of you first meet?
So I actually met him on online dating site. And it was one of the free dating sites, so it didn't have a whole lot of filters to filter out, you know, like catfishing or just people that were just complete creeps or just looking for hookups. But I had met him. I actually started talking to him, and then I decided to date somebody else. So we stopped communication. And then a few months later, when I was not with that person anymore, I reached back out to him. And then that's kind of when everything started to take off between us.
How would you describe the girl you were back then when you guys first got together?
I was definitely a very insecure person back then. I had a lot of struggles in my personal life. I was dealing with a lot financially. I was in a lot of debt. I was living on my own, so I was very independent. But I had a lot of body image issues, and I had just gotten out of a 5-year relationship probably 10 months prior to meeting him. And so I was really not having good luck in the dating scene, and I would almost classify it as I was a little bit desperate. Like, I would just talk to people that maybe I wouldn't have normally talked to just because I felt like, well, I should give them a chance, or, you know, maybe I'm too narrow-minded and I'm being too selective on the people that I would talk to or date. So I had a lot of my own problems inside. I was very depressed and everything was just piled on top of me. I was a very different person back then. And I think I had a clouded mind just from being ghosted so many times or just having people taking advantage of me that I almost couldn't see clearly.
What was your first impression of your ex-boyfriend?
Well, when we started talking online, you know, he kind of gave me an idea of like his situation, which wasn't ideal. He was actually what one would call maybe like a drifter. He worked for a company that was out of state, but had come into town to do some work, like traveling. And so he didn't have like a home. He was put up in a hotel by his company, and he didn't have his own vehicle because he was actually a truck driver. So those kind of things, like at first I was kind of like, well, that's really kind of sketchy and weird. But again, I was like, yeah, but you got to keep an open mind. And just because maybe he doesn't have his own place and doesn't have his own vehicle right now doesn't mean he's not going to, because he promised me up and down that he would. That was his plan, saving money. I'm going to stay here, all this stuff. And when I met him, everything wasn't as rosy colored as he kind of coded it to be. He was not what I expected when I saw him in person. And the situation was a little bit different than what he had told me the situation was. And it was a shock when I first met him. I was just taken aback because, like I said, it was completely different. And for some reason, I just was like, okay, well, you're here, so push through it and give this person a chance.
Do you think that when you realized things weren't quite adding up, do you think that you chose to look past it because you thought that he had good intentions? Or do you think that deep down you just tried to ignore warning signs of who this man could actually be?
I think, honestly, it's probably a little bit of both. I mean, I definitely, my radar was there. I definitely could see. I could see things that weren't adding up. I could see that I was putting myself, even the first day I met him, in a bad situation that I wouldn't have normally put myself in. But in my head, I was convincing myself of what he had been telling me was the truth. And maybe I was just seeing it too negatively. But then also, I was, like I said, I was a different person. So I was a little more desperate. So I was kind of like, well, maybe I just don't need to worry about this right now. You know, it's a first time I'm meeting this person. I don't know him that well. Like, I don't know what is the truth and what isn't, so all I can do is take it at its value and just hope for the best.
Once you got to know him, did you feel like he was different, but you still liked him, or different and you were still kind of in that desperate mindset?
I mean, to be honest, when I first met him, the first night I kind of clicked with him and we got pretty close. And then the second day, the very next day when I saw him again, I was like, I'm not interested in this person. I saw him differently and I thought, this is not a person I even want to be seen in public with. And I was like, I don't want to talk to this person anymore. Like, this isn't going to work kind of situation. But I let that second date continue because I just didn't want to be mean and say, not interested, bye, see ya, I'm out of here. And once I got past that second date, I didn't really talk to him. But then I was hurt from another situation. Another person had turned me down. And so I kind of just was like, you know what? This is what's here in front of you. This is your only option. So just get over your high standards kind of was my mentality. Like, I was thinking I was being too picky and I had too high of standards and it wasn't this person's fault. And again, like, I need to give them a chance. So I let the relationship begin. And I obviously now I know that I shouldn't have, and I should have listened to that. I don't like this person. I don't want to be with him. But a lot of it was just that, well, nobody else wants me, and this person does want me. It was obvious that he was in love with me and infatuation from the beginning. So I just kind of wrote it out.
Can I ask you what was so off-putting about him?
I think a lot of it, like I said, he was kind of a drifter, and he didn't have really any money. I mean, it was different than the situation he told me. I came to find out he really wasn't being paid for things and he would have to fight to get his money from his boss. It was an entirely sketchy situation. But like, again, his physical appearance was a much more than I thought it was. He was very tatted, which I have no problem with. I actually was attracted to that. But when I met him in person, like, the tattoos were very, like, kind of weird. Like, he even had a tattoo of, like, a teddy bear and a noose. Like, it was kind of just strange. And he was much heavier than I was given the impression, even by pictures, that he was. And, like, his clothes were very dirty and, like, were worn and had holes in them. And those were his nice clothes. Like, this is what he chose to wear going out to dinner with me on our second date in public, was a hole that had, like, rips in a shirt that had, like, rips and tears in it. And so to me, I was just kind of like, whoa, this is a little bit different than, like, obviously my situation. And I would never, you know, do that on a date. Like, I would never come looking like I just came from work and I was a scrub or something. So that was really the part that put me off on that first date out, that second time I ever met him. It was just kind of, oh, this wasn't like a one thing. This is like, this is his life.
Once you guys got through those initial dates, how did your relationship progress?
Our relationship progressed pretty rapidly. It was very clear that he, like I said, he was infatuated with me from the beginning. He would tell me all kinds of these sweet things, how beautiful I was, how smart I was, how gorgeous my eyes were. That was one thing he always said to me, was like, he would look me in my eyes and just say that he could get lost in my eyes forever. You know, he would lay it on thick to try and, like, woo me and, like, impress me. And he would always speak so sweet to me and charming. And he was very charming. He would convince you that his situation wasn't nearly as bad as it would, because he could talk himself into it. And I think that he talked himself into this relationship. So I was like, okay, sounds good. And so we would see each other almost every night. And then eventually he would start to stay the night. And I was driving to go get him, and I would drive back to my apartment. And then the next morning I would have to drive him back so he could go to work. And every night when he would get off, he would be like, "Oh, I want to see you so bad. I just miss staring into your eyes." And he would always lay it on. And even if I had, like, even if I wanted to hang out with my friends, it was, "Oh, but I just miss you. And I just want to be with you so much. I'm falling in love with you." And he would charm it in this way where you were like, "Oh my gosh, this guy is so good to me. Why wouldn't I want to spend time with him? Why? I can see my friends tomorrow. I'll spend tonight seeing him." And so we got to a much more serious part of our relationship a lot faster. I mean, I would say that we said, "I love you," probably within the first week. And it was kind of a thing where he said it, and like, it was like he slipped up and said it. So he said it in a way that would be like, "Oh my gosh, like, he's in love with me and he doesn't want me to know, like, I love you too." And so everything from there really progressed super fast. I mean, he was coming to stay with me and like move in with me, I mean, in less than a month. That's how fast everything was going.
When I ask you this question, I want you to try and think about it in regards to during that time, not now that you have the perspective that you do. Do you feel like at that point you were happy in this relationship?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, when I was in the relationship with him, I always thought any problems that there were my fault. They were my problems. And he was this great guy. And I thought, we're going to move in together. It's going to be happily ever after. We had talks of getting married, eventually like having kids. And I mean, I thought that this was the man that I was going to spend the rest of my life with. And whatever problems there were with his situation, we'd work them out as a team, and I would make him a better person, and it would all work out in the end. So I would definitely say that, yeah, I 100% thought I was in love with him, and I was happy even when things were bad, even when I should have been unhappy, and even if I was mad at him, I still was like, this is great. This is great. I have somebody that wants to be with me. And I think that was the big thing that I held on to, is this man wants to be with me. He doesn't want to get rid of me. He doesn't want to ghost me. He doesn't want someone else. He wants me and me only.
What was the overall feeling of him with your friends and your family?
Well, I never once introduced him to my friends or family. I think that always in the back of my head, my mother was a very judgmental person. And I think that was part of the reason why when I judged him, I was like, you can't be so judgy, because my mom's never liked a boyfriend. I don't think moms usually do, but I didn't want her to meet him because I knew everything she would pick apart. And it would be the same things that I was picking apart. And my friends, I just was embarrassed. Deep down, even though I would talk about him to them and I would tell them what was going on, I never wanted them to meet him because I knew that they would also think the same things that I had thought, and thought, this is a weird pairing and I don't like this guy. They saw pictures of him, like selfies we would take and stuff, because we would post them like on social media or whatever. And my best friends, I would send it to them. But there was always a part of me that was like, you can never meet this person, like, because you're not gonna like it. I already know, because secretly I didn't. There was even a time where I was going out with my friend for her birthday, and she got to my apartment, came to the door, and I was like, okay, let's leave. And he was there because he had been staying with me at this point. And she was like, oh, I need to use the bathroom. And I was like, can we use the bathroom at the restaurant when we get there, or wherever we were going? And she was just like, why can't I just come in and go to the bathroom? And I was like, yeah, it's fine. And like, I stepped back and I remember kind of trying to block her view so that they wouldn't see each other. But they did, because he was like, hey, and she was like, hey. And I remember thinking like, oh, no, I never wanted you to see. I can only imagine the thoughts that are going through her head, all these judgments of this guy. And so it was something, even though I felt happy and everything, it was very much something I wanted to keep sheltered and secret and hidden from everyone around me.
You said earlier that you guys had talks of marriage. Did you imagine marrying this man and kind of always keeping him a secret from everyone?
No, I didn't, because I thought that I would be able to mold him and help him like with his potential. Like, I mean, there were times when I would always try to get him to leave his job and I would be like, you can just find something else. Like, I would go out of my way. I would let him use my car while I was at work so he could go try to find jobs. I was always trying to push him to be a better person. And I was trying to push him to be better because I wanted it to look better. If I got him out of this job where it was totally an illegitimate company and it was a bad situation, if I could get him to not work there anymore, I could get him to have his own job, then that would make him appear better and that would make him look better. And eventually when those things all would align, then okay, yeah, then when he's molded and he has new clothes and a new look, then he's more presentable. And then those things in the back of my head that I'm thinking everybody is going to judge on are going to not be there anymore. So I'd always had those hopes of, if I can change this person to what I want him to be, then those problems disappear and I don't have that secret anymore.
I'm going to go off the side for a minute, and I'm curious to know a little bit more about the relationship between you and your mom. And you said that she was judgmental. Do you feel like a lot of those judgments came towards you? And did you feel inferior to your mom?
I would say that that's pretty accurate. I remember all my life. I mean, I've always been overweight all my life. And I even remember back to when I was a child, one time my mom said, you're fat. Like, I mean, I was probably 10. And my mom had no room to talk about this because she was always overweight too. But I remember her always saying, like, you fit into clothes that older girls fit into, and like, you're too big. And she was always hard judgmentally on me. And I think it made things worse, because it never made things better, because it wasn't like, oh, my mom tells me these things about my body image, so let me fix them. It was always like, well, that's what I am. So that's what I'm always going to be. My mom would always say how terrible of a person I am. Like, oh, you're just such, a pain in the butt. You're such a brat. You're so spoiled. You're just mean and nasty to everyone. And she would do the same things to my father. And so that was all I ever knew. And I think, like, the boyfriend that I had left that I was with for 5 years, she immediately, the first time she met him, she made all these judgments just based off of his looks. So that was, I mean, even to this day, my current boyfriend, she's never even met, because, and not because there's anything about him to be ashamed of. It's just, I don't want that influence, because if she says something negative, it's going to convince me that's true, whether or not it is. She's always going to tell me that person's not good enough. So in my head, I'm going to find reasons why that person's not good enough. And without fail, every time I've gotten into a serious relationship, I don't try to introduce, like, I would show pictures or whatever, but I just was always waiting for that hammer to drop of, here's everything negative. Here's this, here's this, here's that. I mean, I had a relationship that ended and I was in my lowest point with depression, and she actually liked this boyfriend that I was with, and she told me, it's your fault that he left, because you're the problem and you're a terrible person and you're negative and you're depressed. And so those things have just always been there because that's what my mom says I am. So I guess I am. That's just always been something I've had to deal with, and part of the reason I keep her out of my life.
Going back to this relationship, how long in total did your relationship last for?
It was kind of off and on. We had an off period, and then we had a period where he was out of the state. But all in all, it only lasted 2 months. It wasn't a long-term relationship. It was serious in nature, but it wasn't long-term.
What do you think was the first moment in this relationship where you said to yourself, I don't want to be in this relationship anymore?
I think that happened a multitudes of times. The first time that I got out of the relationship, he was actually staying with me. And for whatever reason, I took him to work in the morning, and his boss like cut in for the day and was like, I ain't got nothing for you to do. You need to get away home. And I was at work, and I was like, I can't do anything for you. And he started walking, and that really set him off. And it was my fault, of course. He would always take advantage of the fact that inside I felt like everything was my fault, and he would make it your fault, no matter what it was. It could be too hot outside, and it somehow is your fault that it's too hot. So it was my fault that I had a job that I couldn't leave to come get him. So he had to walk, and he was walking back to our apartment. And I mean, he was calling me nonstop. He was texting me nonstop, just ridiculing me, telling me like, oh my gosh, you're such a pain in the butt. Just like, you need to come get me, like, and all this stuff. And it was nonstop. It was 20 texts in a row. It was calling me and I don't answer, keep calling me and calling me and calling me, leaving me voicemails, telling me, like calling me all sorts of terrible names. And I remember I was with my coworker, and she was just like, oh my God, like, what are you doing? Like, this man is abusive to you verbally. And I'm crying my eyes out at work. I can't even work because I'm so upset that he's mad at me. And she was like, you need to get rid of this dude. And I was like, you're right. And I was like, got on the phone. We're screaming at each other outside in the parking lot of my job while I'm on the phone. And I'm like, you know what? We're done. Like, when I get home, I'm going to pack your stuff up in a bag and I'm going to throw it outside. And he's like, you come back, I'm calling the police. And I was like, go ahead. It's my apartment. So my friend was like, no, we're doing this now. We're not doing this in 6 hours. We're going now. We're going to take a little lunch break, and we're going to go to your house, and we're going to pack up his stuff, and we're going to put it out on the curb. And so her and another one of my coworkers went with me because they're like, we're going with you, because if he's there or he got there or anything goes down, we're going to be there to protect you and to witness it. So we'd gone, and he was there waiting on the steps, sitting outside the apartment, because he didn't have a key either. And because I was his form of transportation, so he had no reason to have a key because he was always with me. So he's sitting outside, and we pull up, we get out the car, my two friends get out the car, they walk up to the door. I don't say a word. He's on the phone calling the cops, and me and the other friend go inside, one stands outside, and I pack up all his stuff in bags, and I take it outside, and we're walking to the car. We get in the car, and the cops pull up. I'm like, we just got to deal with this right now. Like, we don't need to leave, because then they're just going to show up at my work, because he knows where I work, so he's going to send them there. So we get back out of the car, and the police come up to me. There's two of them. One's talking to him. The other one comes up to me and is like, what's going on here? We got, you know, this guy's calling, telling us that you're kicking him out. And I said, well, he doesn't live here. I gave him the whole situation. Here's what's going on. I let him come stay here. It was really stupid. We've only known each other a month and all this stuff. And he goes, well, you know, he's saying that you hit him. Like, he's saying that you struck him and scratched his face. And we were like, no. I'm like, nope, never have I ever laid hands on this man. In fact, he's tried to lay hands on me. And they were like, the cop was like, yeah, I mean, I know he's full of shit because he's got no marks on his face. So he comes up to the cops trying to tell them, she abused me, she scratched my face. And they're like, where? Because, I mean, he didn't even have the forethought if he was going to make up this accusation to attempt to try and scratch his own face. Like, this is just how ridiculous things would be. And the cops were like, okay, well, you gave him this shit. Like, don't make this mistake. Just be done with this guy. Obviously, you've done nothing wrong. This guy is a lunatic. And they told him, like, here's your stuff, get out. And so that was the end of that situation. And I went back to work, and then I came home, and my friend came with me later just to make sure, like, he wasn't still there waiting for me. And that was the first time that I ended things. And I, and you know, it was continuous, blow up my phone, leave me voicemails, leave me text messages, just berating me again for that entire whole day and just making me feel like dirt for the rest of the time until I finally decided to block him.
Did you know anything about his previous relationships?
I found out about that later. He had kind of mentioned, I knew that he had been engaged prior. He used to live in a different part of the country. And he told me he drove oil tankers and all this stuff. And he had an apartment that he lived in with his fiance. And he would always tell me he spent 10 grand on a ring for her and all this stuff. And, you know, implied that he had so much money. And he said he always told me that she was just this total rager and was just always like, nothing was good enough for her. He could spend all the money in the world on her, but she'd never be satisfied. And I want to say that he told me like she was cheating on him while he was out working. And, you know, of course, I mean, it's always the other person's fault. It's never your own. So, of course, he would tell me all these things like she's so terrible and she destroyed me and I can't even remember all the things he would tell me about her, but it was definitely she was the villain in the situation. And that was the only relationship he ever talked about was this ex-fiance.
After the situation with the cops and that whole ordeal, was that the end of your relationship or did he come back in at any point?
No, it wasn't the end. So, I mean, I stayed silent from him for probably 2 or 3 days. And it was really just like a cool down. Like, I knew if I spoke to him, he was just going to fly off the handle and lose it all on me. So I had him blocked and I was doing my own thing. And I said to myself, like, okay, just call him and like, let's finalize this breakup and like let's have a civil conversation and like just then we can just move on. So I remember I called him and he was like at the store or something stupid, and you know, he talked to me calmly and he was, oh my gosh, I know I screwed up, everything's my fault, you're just so amazing, and I knew I would eventually screw up with a woman like you because there's no way I could ever be happy. And it was just like an hour conversation of him just telling me how much of a big mistake he made and how he knows that I would never take him back and he'll never be able to make it up to me. And he understands that I can do better than him. And, you know, whoever I would date next would be so, so amazingly lucky. Just telling me all these great things about myself, which was opposite of what he would tell me, you know, 2 or 3 days prior. And it was, everything was his fault. And, you know, he messed up. And then he said, you know, I'm going to leave town and I just want to see you one last time. Can we go get lunch? And by then it was the weekend, so I was done with work. It was Friday night when I was talking to him. For some reason, I agreed, and I said, yeah, we can go, and we'll have lunch tomorrow, and that'll be our goodbyes. So we ended up going to lunch, and it was a big ordeal because, you know, he orders his food comes out, and all of a sudden he's just so sick. He's just so, like, sick to his stomach, and he just can't eat his food because he's so torn up inside about our relationship and how much everything got screwed up. And yeah, I can't eat my food, like everything. And he's like, you live like right across the road from where we are. Like, can I come over and say bye to your cat? Because he loved my cat that I had. And he's like, can I just say goodbye to my cat, your cat, and just that'll be our goodbye. And I'm like, okay, I don't know why I said yes to it. I knew that he was working his charms on me, like trying to kiss my butt in hopes that I would take him back. And it worked. It ultimately ended up working because then, you know, we talked and I was like, listen, if this can never happen again, like I won't be treated like that. And you've got to drill down and get a job here and start setting some money aside and start paying rent if you're going to live here. And like, we basically renegotiated continuing to have a relationship at that point.
Do you remember when all of this was going on and you're negotiating this relationship with this man, what you were feeling internally during that time?
I'm not 100% sure. I can't remember that vividly, but I can only imagine that I know I was convinced. I thought, yeah. I mean, you get in arguments with your significant others all the time. Yeah, okay, so, you know, you say things that you don't mean. He's obviously repenting for it. He's trying to make up for it, and he's promising you all these things. So, I mean, wouldn't you do the same? Wouldn't you hope the same if it was the shoe was on the other foot and it was me attacking him and me making a big scene and I realized how much of a big mistake that was and how much of an idiot I was? I would want the person I'm with and I'm in love with to put that aside because they're in love with me. So internally, I was like, I think I'm in love with this man, even though he just berated me a few days earlier and called the police on me and lied to the police and tried to accuse me of domestic abuse. But that's just a mistake. He's mad. You know, I'm supposed to marry this person. Like, we had talks of this. I mean, so he must realize he's an idiot and things will be better. I was totally convinced he charmed me into thinking, yes, it can be better going forward. In fact, it will make us stronger because we worked through this hump in the road, so to speak.
And how long was he able to keep his promise for that things would be better?
I would say probably about 2 weeks, because we were together about a month at that point. So about a month and a half in. And it really kind of all happened at once. One day, his boss said, we're leaving tomorrow and we're going like two states over. And he was like, what? Like, and he was like, he was obviously still working that job. So that didn't change. I mean, he was actively trying to get something else, but he still was doing it. And, you know, he had nothing to stand on his own. Could he just stay there with me and be completely unemployed? Well, I mean, he thinks that's an option, but I've told him, like, this is not an option. And he was back at the hotel at this point, so he wasn't living with me again. And he was devastated because he was going to have to leave. And he was like, well, we'll figure something out. Like, if I leave for a couple of months, I can save my money and then I can come back here. So that's kind of what we were going to do. And he really started to go off the deep end that night. And one thing about him that he always told me in the past, he had done drugs. And when I say that, I mean like meth, like hard drugs, not just smoking pot. And he said all that was behind him. Like he made it sound like it was years in the rearview mirror. And I knew that drugs were still around at that hotel, but I was totally convinced that he wasn't doing them. But that night he was just so weird. He was at my apartment and he was taking a shower and he locked himself in the bathroom. I can hear him talking to himself. And I'm at the door like, what are you doing? Like I'm beating on the door because he's got it closed with the shower running, but he's not in the shower. And like he finally opened the door. And I mean, again, what is wrong with you? Leave me alone. Like he's berating me and going off, calling me all sorts of names. And I'm like, what's wrong with you? You're in here talking to yourself. And he was just saying all this stuff like, I can't do this, can't do that. It was rambling. And I was like, what do you have in here? Like, why would the door even be locked? Like, do you have drugs in here? And then of course, it's why are you accusing me? I told you I don't. Like that's behind me and everything. And I mean, it was a scary night because I mean, to this day, I'm still convinced that he probably was high on something and doing them in my bathroom. But he was just so erratic that night and it was so bizarre. And then, so then it was kind of like, okay, well then I guess maybe we won't. You go to this other state and save to come back here and start fresh. Like maybe we shouldn't do that. And then the next morning when I took him back to the hotel to leave, it was a different story again. It was a completely different person. It was Jekyll and Hyde, because then it was, you're the love of my life. You're my everything. And I remember I was crying. We're both crying because obviously he's telling me, I love you. I love you. I love you. And I'm thinking like, he loves me. He loves me. He loves me. And I'm losing this man. I don't know when I'm going to see him again. And we're hysterically crying. And I remember he like put his hands on my shoulder and he looked me dead in the eye. And he said, look at me, like stern, but not in like a mean way, like a look at me. I need you to look me in the eyes. And he said to me, I will be back because there is no way in hell I'm going to lose the love of my life. I am going to marry you one day. And that's the only thing I know for sure. And it stuck with me. Like it was just so, it almost sounded like the most honest thing he'd ever said, that he was in love with me and he wanted nothing but me. And I mean, I was everything to him and I was his soulmate, the love of his life. And he was going to fight for me. That was kind of where we left it that day. And he left and went to another part of the country.
Looking back, do you feel like he knew your insecurities and always preyed on them?
1,000,000%. I don't remember telling him like my insecurities. Like, I don't know that I ever really mentioned them to him when we first started talking. But it's like he knew that I had a strained relationship with my mother. He knew what I liked. He knew that I loved cats. My cat was very important to me. So he loved cats and my cat was very important to him. Like he knew exactly what to say and how to say it. I mean, he was manipulating me on all levels because I was believing him because he's telling me exactly what I've always wanted to hear. I've always wanted to hear, you're amazing, you're wonderful, you're perfect, I'm so in love with you, I'm going to marry you. Like those were always the things that I wanted and I wanted to hear. And he knew somehow without me even telling him, he knew exactly what it would take to convince me otherwise. And I mean, especially when he, you know, was telling me, the only thing I know in life is that I'm going to marry you. And I'm going to be back and it's gonna work. And that was like, I even remember telling my friends that was the moment for me. Like, I was like, okay, everything else doesn't matter because he's telling me this right now, and this is the truth. So when he gets back, it's going to be better.
How was your relationship whenever he was away?
It was never bad when he was away. So it was always like we would talk, you know, we would text during the day, we would talk at night. Back then I was driving for Uber, and I was doing it to save up money for his ticket back. So like for him to take a bus. So I would be talking to him and be like, yeah, I'm just waiting for another ride. Like, and you know, he was just like, oh, I love you so much. Like, thank you for helping me get the money so I can come back there. We're going to be reunited so soon. Like, and he was gone probably a week that he was gone before he came back. But that whole week, like, I mean, when I wasn't at my job, I was driving, I was delivering food, I was driving to people to the airports or gas stations, you know, whatever, just to try and meet this goal of here's the money and I'll buy you the bus ticket so you can come back here and then we'll start fresh. So there was never any hostility. He was never negative to me. It was always positive, wonderful, just a continuation of that goodbye where he's convinced and he's still convinced because I'm still showing that I'm such a amazing, wonderful woman because I'm doing all this for him and for our relationship, and I'm committed. So that part, it was good, and it would convince me, you know, because it was staying good. I was convinced that, oh wow, this maybe it really sees this, and things are better because we haven't argued about anything. We, you know, neither of us called anybody names. It's just been so good. Like maybe this is really gonna work. Maybe the distance is what we needed to bring us closer.
And how were things once he got back?
Instantly, they were really good. I picked him up from the bus station. It was like the middle of night. Like he came in, it was like midnight. So I was tired. We got home. And I remember I was so convinced that things were going to work. I like went and made a copy of my key to the apartment. And like, I got like this card and I got like a gift card to his favorite restaurant, the restaurant we went to for our first official date. And like, and it was like a $50 gift card. It wasn't like cheap. It was like, here's a meal for both of us kind of gift card. And I was already struggling financially as it was. And he was struggling financially and I would pay for a lot of his stuff. So I was digging myself deeper. I just wasn't seeing it. But I'm like, oh, I'm going to make everything really nice. Like, I think I might have even, like, gotten some balloons or something, like, to welcome him home, you know? And so it was really great. He was just like, oh, my God. And I was like, it was like a formal, like, move in with me because here's your key to my apartment. And it was really good. Like, he was all like, oh, my gosh, I love you so much. And, of course, I want to live here with you. And our cat, like he would always like say, like my cat was his cat, because it was like we were a family. And he's like, it's all I've ever wanted, and all this stuff. And I mean, for like the first couple of days when he got back, it was really good until it started to take a turn.
What all did you know about his relationship with his family?
His relationship with his family was not good. I remember he told me he had a brother, a younger brother, who was like 18 or 19 at the time. And he's in his 30s at the time. Like, I think he was 33 or 35. So he's much older, not much older, but he's older than me enough. He's in his 30s. I'm in my 20s. And he had a younger brother. His mother was deceased and his dad was still alive and lived back in their hometown with his brother. And I don't remember how early on in the relationship, maybe like 3 weeks or so, he had told me he had a lot of issues when he was a kid. And I was like, what is wrong? Like, I could tell like something was really bothering him when he was trying to like, he was kind of saying things. And I was like, remember we were sitting there and I was just like, you can just tell me, like, you can trust me. Like, me again, I'm thinking I'm in love with this man, he's in love with me. Like, you can trust me. And I remember he told me that when he was a child that his father molested him sexually. And so he hated his father with a passion. Like, he wished death upon his father because he messed him up so badly. And I think like he's told me his uncle was part of it also. Like, his father and his uncle would sexually abuse him. And I don't know how old he was. I don't remember if he ever told me, but I just assume probably early teen years. But he had a very, very dysfunctional relationship with his family. He only spoke to his brother, and his brother was supposed to be going into one of the branches of the military because the boyfriend, he was a former Marine. And so I can't remember which branch, but it's like they don't like each other. Like, Marines think they're better than this other branch, whichever one it was, maybe it's the Army or something. But the brother was going into like the nemesis branch, and he was like, oh, you're going in there with all these losers and all this stuff. And like, I would remember that would be what they would talk about all the time. But he was also like, I'm so proud of my brother for following my steps and going into the military to fight for the country, and just, it'll really shape him into a real man and everything. And that was about the only positive relationship with his family he had with his younger brother.
How did your relationship take a turn after you invited him to live with you?
Well, like, after the first few days, I mean, maybe like 3 days, 4 days, like, I was kind of getting tired of him. Like, I'd always had my own space. I'd been living on my own two years at that time. And I was kind of starting to feel a little burdened by this man living here, not paying any bills. He's completely unemployed. He's driving my car when I'm at work, trying to go find a job. And so we're arguing about that because I'm like, I don't have any, I'm running out of money. I'm living paycheck to paycheck and barely making that. I'm having to pay the rent. You're not getting a job fast enough. Like, just go work at McDonald's to make some money in the meantime, kind of. And it was getting very strained. And we would start fighting about it, obviously. And he would be like, you clearly don't want me here and stuff. And like, we were getting such fights that I would like leave. I remember I left one time and I just went and like parked across the street from the apartment and like talked to my friend on the phone. And I was like, oh, this guy is so, like, can't stand him. He's such a loser and all this stuff. And she was like, oh, let's go like get some wine, like make you feel better. Like, we'll talk about it. Like, very positive. She was a great friend to me back then. And she was like, maybe you just shouldn't be with this guy. Like, you're letting him live there free. And I was like, yeah, you know, you're right. Like, I should get rid of him. Like, I'll tell him, like, here's your time frame. If you don't have something in, remember what I said, maybe a week, like, then you're gonna have to leave and go back to where you just came from. And so when I left, of course, he's blowing my phone up, as is per usual behavior. It's call, I'm ignoring, call again, leave me voicemail, send me text messages, berate me, tell me how terrible I am, how I don't love him, and how he gave up everything. You know, he gave up his job and spent 12 hours on a bus to get back to me. Again, all this stuff and that I paid for, doesn't mention that. But so it's all your fault. I did all these things right, and you are now doing this wrong because you walked out of the apartment during an argument. And I came back later that evening, and it was like, I'm sorry, you know, I'm just stressed out. I'm apologizing to him. And he's just like, I know you love me and all this stuff. And somehow the conversation started to turn again. And he was like, you don't even want me here. And I was like, no, I don't want you here. Like, get out. And he's like, all you care about is money. If money's so important to you. And he reached in his pocket and like had like a couple dollars and some change, just loose change, coins and stuff, and he chucked it right at me. Like, I'm 4 or 5 feet away from him, and I mean, full-fledged just throws these coins at me, and they go all over. I mean, I get hit by a few, and they go all over, and I'm like, I'm losing it. I mean, we're screaming at each other and everything, and I'm like, you had better get out. If you don't get out, I'm going to call the police. And he said, go ahead and call the police. I'll just tell them that you attacked me again. And I was like, oh, really, you liar? Like, you did that. You tried that before, and they called your BS because you're not that smart. Like, nobody's going to believe you. And he reached into his pocket, and he pulled out this, like, pocket knife, like switchblade type thing he had. He pulled it out and he held it not to me. He didn't threaten me with it. He held it up against the side of his throat and he said, they'll believe blood and a body. And instantly in my head, it was, I have to stop this. I have to calm this person down because while he has a knife to his throat and not mine, it could just as easily become mine, or he could just as easily kill himself right now. And I'm like, totally, like, within an instant, I'm like, I am so sorry. It's all my fault. Please put the knife down. Like, you know, trying to talk him off the ledge. And I'm, everything's my fault. Totally 100% my fault. I love you. You're the world to me. I wouldn't live without you. And I mean, that was probably the first time that it triggered in my head, this dude is nuts. This is not a safe situation. But you've got to calm him down and you've got to, in your own mind, silently figure out what to do next. So I got him calmed down from it. And I'm just crying. I'm just like, I love you so much. I don't know why I get so upset with you. You know, and he's crying and he's like, I don't know why I get so upset with you. Like, you're my everything, you know. So I'm perceiving to act like, okay, whew, blow that away, you know. But in my head, I'm like, oh my God, like, what the next time he's going to pull that on me? And I remember in the middle of the night, I like took that knife. I totally took that knife that night. It was like in his pants later, and I like, in the middle of the night, got up, got that knife, and I like hit it. And I was like, he's never going to pull that on me again or on himself. And the next day, like, I totally tried to act. Everything's fine. Everything is just wonderful. Like, there's no problems. And the next day, he was on my laptop because he was turning in an application for a job. And he needed to get to it from his email. So he had signed on to his email on my computer. And like later I went back into my computer and it was still signed on. So I was like, I mean, let me do some snooping. And I found like a folder that had his ex-fiance's name on it. And I was like, ooh, I know some stuff went down there. So I'm like, let me read these messages. And I'm totally expecting there to be threats from her because he always made it sound like, you know, he caught her cheating and like she went nuts on him. So I'm totally expecting to find like threats towards him, her calling him this, that, and the other. And like, I'm reading through these messages and it's, I can tell the narrative is he's psycho and she left. They were living together. She took her stuff and moved out. And they had 3 cats and they were her cats. But for whatever reason, because I would never do this, she left those cats and was like, supposed to come back and get them. And there was like a point where there was like a lawyer involved and stuff, and like, I don't know, they were probably both on the lease or something. And I remember I was continuing through the messages. I found a message and it was,
at the beginning of this interview, this woman describes the place she's in when this man came into her life. So she had just gotten out of a serious relationship and she was struggling with feeling insecure. And the reason that I'm reiterating this is because we have all, at some point or another, found ourselves in a place where we don't feel our best. And because of that, we have found ourselves navigating situations that we would normally never be in, and accepting things we would normally never allow to happen. Because when you feel like shit, it is very easy to let everyone treat you like shit. I'm currently reading a book called Everybody Always by Bob Goff. And before you turn this off and think I'm about to go all psycho-religious on you, I promise I'm not. I've become completely obsessed with this book. I've never in my life wanted to read a book more than once, but this one is different. Anyways, in this book, he shares a story about this yellow truck he had and the homeless man that he shared this truck with. I'm summarizing a lot here and missing all of the good stuff, but in this story, he writes about this idea of telling people who they are becoming. So in religion and also in life, there are a lot of expectations put onto people. Every day, we all feel like we are under constant scrutiny. And sometimes it's internal, sometimes it's external, and it can be about things like our job, our relationships, our attitude, our purpose, our freaking worth. And I think for too long, this girl was told she wasn't enough. She mentions the relationship she has with her mom and how she's always treated her less than. So here's the point I'm trying to make and taking too long to do. Be mindful of the things you say to those around you, because eventually people become who we tell them they are. And they find themselves on dates with men who are nothing like they appeared to be on their dating profile, and letting things slide they would normally never accept. Until, as we will come to find out, they find themselves in a place where they are fearing for their own life. Thank you guys for listening. I will see all of you next week.
Everybody has a secret.